Welcome to On Strategy Showcase. I'm Fergus O'Carroll in Chicago. As always, you can connect with me on LinkedIn, and you can reach me at hello@onstrategyshowcase.com if you have any questions or suggestions. Always happy to hear them. We have a couple of fun things coming up over the next few weeks. We're going to be launching our first best of series for this year. And the category is travel and tourism. We've got four great brands that are participating in this who've been doing really great work. And each of them comes at the issue of travel from a different angle. And this is the basis upon which I've selected them. And we have British Airways, we have Airbnb, we have Expedia, and we have Icelandic tourism. Hopefully you're familiar with these campaigns. If not, of course, we'll feature all of them on the episode or the series page for this particular category. So we'll be interviewing the agencies and the clients and talking about each of the campaigns and how they've been evolving over time. So look for that. I think we're going to be pushing that out in February. We're halfway through recording the series. So I think we'll be done by the end of January. We also have Byron Sharp coming up in late January, early February. We've been able to schedule Byron to come on, and you may know Byron from Ehrenberg Bass and his series of books on how brands grow. Very excited to talk to Byron, and we'll be doing that soon. That'll be a great and I know a popular episode. We are talking today, however, about Folgers Coffee. If you are here in the U.S., you're familiar with the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. That tagline has been around for, I've got to guess, around 50 years. I mean, it's been around for a long time. And the brand has been one of those mainstream mass market brands that has had a dominant share in the at-home morning coffee occasion. And the brand came up at a time, anyway, its major competitor has, I think, always been Maxwell House. But that's changed, of course, in the last couple of decades as things such as, look at Starbucks, you look at the coffee houses, you look at Keurig Coffee and Espresso and Peet's. And there's been a sort of a level of sophistication that's come into the category that has had an impact on Folgers. So for Folgers, the question was, how do they begin to increase appeal and consideration and usage among a younger generation? So this is a conversation around the evolution of that old promise, because Folgers was always centered around the at-home morning occasion. And as we all know, coffee has got a massive new set of category entry points, and Folgers has had to deal with that. So I'm excited to have Ali O'Shea, a VP Strategy Director at Publicis in New York, and Alana Watson, Creative Director at Publicis is New York. Actually, in fact, they've all rolled into BBH New York now. So they both are with BBH I think that just happened recently. So I suppose I should be saying it's BBH. Anyway, we're happy and excited to talk about Folgers. We have done, we've done Starbucks in the past. We have done, or we're doing Keurig Coffee soon. We've done Yorkshire Tea. So if you're in that category, you might enjoy some of those other episodes too. So here it is, Folgers. We'll be right back.
Hello, my name's James Herman, and this is my best Fergus O'Carroll impression. But actually, I sound like this, and now that I got your attention, I want you to consider becoming a master of advertising effectiveness, which you can do with me on a 6-week online program that'll give you a next-level understanding of how to make advertising that creates consistently better commercial results. Over the past decade, institutions like the IPA, the Ehrenberg Bass Institute, and WARC have used huge evidence bases to uncover what really works and how it works. And now all of that knowledge is yours when you become a master of advertising effectiveness. Our next cohort starts in April. Check it out at mae.academy. That's mae.academy.
Every once in a while, a single execution for a campaign will kind of draw my interest. I've been familiar with the Folgers brand for many decades. And so when I saw this new work, I was curious about what was going on. It's a brand with a ton of distinctive brand assets that we'll probably talk about today. So I reached out to both Alana and to Ali to talk about this. So welcome, Ali.
Thank you.
And welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome, Alana.
Thank you so much. We're excited to be here.
Yep.
Arguably some of my favorite episodes, and because I just find them to be maybe the most challenging, is sort of taking established brands and seeing how the agencies and the marketing clients start to try and shift things. Because everything we hear in marketing is about the fact that you know, it's not only difficult to establish a brand, but it's even more difficult to shift perceptions of it. That's what really drew me to this. But before we get into it, Ali, can you kind of, for those who are not familiar with it, can you tell us what Folgers is, and you know, where does it sit in the category?
Sure. Yeah, Folgers is a brand. It's a coffee brand, and it's got so much heritage, so much tradition. It's been around for over 170 years, but it was really well known as being sort of the first at-home coffee brand. And it really introduced people to making coffee at home in the U.S. And because of that great history, it has been the number one coffee brand in the U.S. in terms of many different metrics: sales, awareness, familiarity. And it also has just so much sentimental value to many Americans. It's got, you know, people just have such fond memories associated with this brand. We even heard people saying it's as American as baseball or apple pie. And it really enjoyed that leading position for a very long time. But, you know, once we got the brand, it had started to erode over the years. And that's particularly because there's sort of been this premiumization in the coffee category, and which led Folgers to become a little less relevant. And so where it sits in the category is it's very much a mainstream brand. So that means that it's sandwiched between private label, which has really increased in quality in recent years, and then more premium brands, usually the ones you think about associated with coffee shops. And those coffee shop brands, despite having a higher price point, they really have been catching up in terms of penetration.
So when you talk about it as sort of kind of a share erosion over time, are we talking about share erosion at retail? Is that's primarily where this brand is sold, on the shelf at retail, right?
Yes, exactly. And that's sort of been the interesting thing, is as these coffee shop brands sort of moved from only being in coffee shops to being on shelf in retail, it's sort of really exploded and taken a big chunk out of Folgers.
We will drink a different type of coffee at home than we might in different drink occasions or away from home. Is that the same situation with somebody who's currently drinking Folgers? Will they go to Starbucks or Pete's or to Dunkin' for coffee? How are those habits a little bit different for them when they're away from home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And these are people who absolutely go to coffee shops and get, you know, fun lattes. And, you know, it's very much based on the mood. It's not that people, you know, only drink their coffee in one certain way.
And so, and then a follow-up on that before I go to Alana is, did you then find that what you were trying to do is expand the use occasions for Folgers, or was it just to sort of gain new drinkers who would drink it at home in that morning time period?
Yeah, it definitely was to get more people to take a second look at Folgers, because of where, you know, there's sort of a generational divide about where you started drinking coffee. So a lot of people, you know, when you think about older Gen X and boomers, when they first started drinking coffee, it was very much, you know, at home with their parents, and they were drinking Folgers. So Folgers sort of became the default for them. But then as coffee shops sort of became ubiquitous, and the younger Gen X and millennials, their first coffee experience was really at these coffee shops. What we were trying to do with this campaign was to get people to take another look and actually consider picking up Folgers for at home.
So Alana, when you get exposed to the brand here, how has it been historically marketed? It has that incredibly, well, I don't know if it's famous in certain circles. Maybe certain generations don't even know what it is. But the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup is a long time tagline. What was the advantage of that line, and what was the disadvantage for you as a creative thinking about it in the initial stages?
Yeah, I mean, that jingle is iconic. As you said, I think it's one of the top 10 jingles in U.S. history. People still sing it. I think if you search it on Twitter, it's referenced once a day. People, even Snoop Dogg just did something on TikTok about the best part of waking up. So it's definitely part of the cultural lexicon and something that we're all familiar with, especially in advertising. So taking it on and wanting to pay homage to it, but not keep repeating the same jingle was definitely a challenge, because we needed people to think differently about Folgers. And that jingle is associated with these beautiful sun-drenched mornings. It's very sentimental, and we needed to change perceptions.
The work has been, that's a great term to use, sentimental. It was really nice work, very American, very family oriented. You would always have that. It was always associated with the morning time. And there was the daughter who was coming home from college, or the son that was coming home from the army, and the family embracing each other around this coffee. And so it was really strong work. And was it felt that it had sort of run its course, and that it couldn't be updated, that it had to be sort of reinvented?
I think the work was, yeah, sentimental. It definitely tugged at people's heartstrings. It wasn't talking about the coffee. I think one of the main issues with especially people buying it in the store was that they associated it with kind of like a weak diner coffee. You know, my grandparents drank that. It's in church basements. It's not this quality premium brand that had started showing up. So while they were thinking of the brand in a nice way, they weren't thinking that the product itself had quality. So we needed to really shift perception and make it about the coffee itself and the taste and the craft behind it.
Why do you think, just because this is the sort of stuff that fascinates me, why does a Folgers drinker drink Folgers in the morning and then drink other coffees during the day? Why don't they just go all in on Starbucks? Why are they staying with that Folgers in the morning time at home? Is it habit? Is it convenience? Is it sort of preference?
Or even price?
Probably price. I think price is a big part of it. And probably routine. You know, that's just sort of morning is such a routine. I think people do associate Folgers as being consistent, and it's the quality that you can sort of rely on.
I was intrigued by one point from your case study, which is not only do you have to sort of update and modernize, but the product was not changing. The packaging was not changing, which arguably was a hurdle for you. And I'm curious, why was there not a willingness to update the brand identity from a visual perspective, packaging perspective, product perspective?
So they did end up updating labels, packaging. Like, we were able to change the fonts, update the colors, do a little refresh. But because it's consumer packaged goods, the lead time on doing that is a long time. They have to, you know, put it into production. So by the time the campaign came out, I think we were 6 to 8 months away from the package changing, which it was a challenge, but they were willing to put the work out there without the brand changing, because I think what we were saying about the brand is that we are proud of this brand. We're proud of what we do. You just don't know about it yet. Like, we need to reintroduce you to all that Folgers is and kind of pull back the curtain on what makes this brand wonderful and why you should buy it.
This sort of Alana mentioned earlier, this idea of damn good coffee and damn proud of it. Tell me about that, Alana. Did that come early, or was that at the end of this sort of research?
That was the first, that was the brief that I was given when we first took this on, which was, you know, it was great. It had a lot of pride. It had a lot of attitude. There's a lot of great reference campaigns that went in. Like, how do we show this brand as this like American heritage brand that has all this craft and quality behind it in a way that doesn't feel preachy or, you know, talking down to? And like, a lot of that came through with the research that we did, like striking that perfect tone so that it still felt authentic to Folgers. But didn't alienate the current users.
What's interesting for the listener to know is that there's two phases to this campaign. There was the first version in 2019 that was called Harmonizers.
So that was before the Damn Good Coffee, Damn Proud of It positioning, the morning harmonizers.
Okay. Was that at the end then, Allie, of your research that led to harmonizers, or did your research go on the heels of harmonizers?
This research was on the heels of harmonizers.
Okay. So then for the sake of this conversation, we'll put harmonizers away. But if you want to see it, guys, you can see it on the website. It'll be up there. Before we get into the new work, then the latest campaign, Allie, can you please tell me what was it about harmonizers that you guys felt wasn't on point?
Harmonizers certainly did a great job by all marketing measures. It definitely performed well. People enjoyed watching it, and they thought, oh, I love the brand, this is really fun advertising, but they weren't moving the needle on penetration quickly enough. And that's when we really needed to dig in to see, why are people continuing to love the brand but not necessarily pick it up? This is where we needed to dig into those sort of latent misperceptions and talk
so
to people.
So it wasn't moving the needle. It didn't move the needle. It just sort of maybe reinforced the existing perceptions of the brand and made it seem a little bit fresher, but it wasn't driving consideration. It wasn't driving transaction. That's probably fair to say.
Right. Not quickly enough.
It was definitely more like that still brought us into those mornings. It was relatable. It was much more like fresh and modern with, what was happening in those chaotic mornings or those messy mornings. But the product itself, the quality of the product, the people behind it, they weren't involved. So the coffee still kind of sat at the back of the shelf as, this is a not quality product. This doesn't taste as good as the other stuff I'm buying. So that's where the shift came for the next iteration. It's like, how do we get people to think this is actually good coffee?
What was some of the early thinking that you sort of was sort of shaping, but ultimately wasn't felt to be the right executional direction?
Yeah, we definitely tested a lot of different tones, different campaigns. What does a spokesperson look like? Someone, a little older with authority, maybe looking down their nose at the younger generation and their macchiatos with extra oat foam or whatever crazy drinks you're buying at the coffee store. But we found in testing that people didn't respond well to that because it didn't feel like it came from the brand. It didn't feel like it was the right tone for the brand that they had loved so much. It felt very preachy. And then we had ones, that played off of the best part of waking up, what are the best parts of the best part? And it just, through learnings and developing many, many iterations of this campaign, we kind of landed on something that was, high energy, definitely tackled the misperceptions, but maybe not spelling them out as blatantly, and just letting the audience kind of do the work, showing the coffee in a really beautiful way, showing the craft behind it, showing the ties to the hometown, and just making it, just showing, reintroducing you to the brand that you thought you knew.
So tell us about the new work, and we're going to drop it in here. What was the idea?
The idea was really to lean into this introduction and hit off on some of those misperceptions. Bad Reputation as a song kind of came from a rewatch, a very well-timed rewatch of Freaks and Geeks during the pandemic. I was like, Folgers does have a bad reputation, and people who drink it and love it don't care, and the brand who produces it doesn't care. Like, wouldn't that be a lovely way to kind of like show up loud and proud?
What do we see in that spot before I drop it in? So people will, obviously it's just a music track that they're going to hear. Can you describe what's happening in that spot?
Yes. It opens in a supermarket where we see a young woman shopping confidently, an aisle of Folgers presented to her, and two kind of hipster coffee snobs looking on at her in disdain. And in the background, you'll hear the Folgers jingle over the loudspeaker, almost like an elevator track of it, as a nice little nod. And then she kind of gives them a like, yeah, so what look before sweeping all of the Folgers canisters, the giant canisters, into her cart and pushing it down the aisle. And that kicks off the track Bad Reputation. And then you just see, versions of these drinkers kind of taking on their mornings or their afternoons or their evenings drinking coffee in different ways. So you'll see an iced coffee version. Some people didn't really think of Folgers as an iced coffee, but that's a huge millennial.
Yeah, no kidding. It's true.
Drink.
Now, a note to the listener here, because of some usage rights issues to do with the Joan Jett song, we cannot play the spot here in the audio track, but you can go to our website and there's a connected link to YouTube and you can see that as well as all of the other work associated with this episode. You can see on our website at onstrategyshowcase.com. Sorry about that. Now let's get back to the show. So the spot that drew my attention, Ali, was the New Orleans connection. I never knew anything about the New Orleans connection. I'm not sure if most people did. In leaning in on that, was that felt to be sort of a priority message to get across?
Absolutely. People had no idea that Folgers was from New Orleans. And when they found out, in testing, people just had this flood of positive associations. They immediately looked at Folgers in a completely new light. They saw it having a much more distinctive personality, this vibrancy and passion. And it really overturned that sense that Folgers was this, mass-produced brand devoid of real people, personality, or passion. And what was really cool about it is that this was very much a springboard into other ways that we could infuse a lot of that energy into the communications. And so Alana can speak more to this too, but we did incorporate New Orleans natives for authenticity, particularly Trombone Shorty. And we also included the Caramel Curves Bike Club, as well as Folgers plant employees. And we used a local artist, B Mike, as well as a real second line band in the spot. And I think all of that just gave it so much energy and authenticity in the spot and then also beyond it.
Anything you'd add to that, Alana?
We know that younger consumers are definitely bullshit sniffers, so we needed to make sure that the brand was authentic. So being from New Orleans, having a strong roots in New Orleans, being roasted there for 60 years, and the community there really does love the product. Trombone Shorty's sister loves Folgers, and during the pandemic would ask him to pick it up at the grocery store all the time. So when we approached him to do the song, he was like, oh yeah, I love Folgers. Like, my sister drinks it every morning. So it was nice that there was that tie there. Like, when you drive down the highway in New Orleans, you can see the giant Folgers factory with the mural on the side. So it does have a home there. And we wanted to make sure that really shone through so that people could associate it with the city in a real way.
But how about the issue of driving it further into popular culture? I don't know who Trombone Shorty is. I got a feeling most people don't. How or have you tried to sort of force it into or place it in popular culture in ways where your target audience would sort of organically discover it or be surprised that it's there? I mean, why isn't Taylor Swift drinking Folgers coffee, sort of a thing? Was there consideration given that, or were there dimensions to the campaign that sort of drove it into popular culture more outside of the ad element?
The authenticity was really one of the main things we needed to tread carefully with this brand. So having, a much more mass known name drinking the brand, drinking coffee, drinking Folgers, or taking on this song, didn't feel right. It needed to be true, for people to respond well to it. So that's why Troy, who is actually a Grammy winning artist with millions of followers.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, that's okay. He's beloved. He's beloved in that city. He has a really strong following in throughout the United States. It's mostly Joan Jett. And then you'll hear these like horn and brass elements coming through. And that's Troy and the brass band's recording.
It seems that like being authentic to the brand is great if the brand's authenticity is relevant. And so when in New Orleans, there's a rich sort of cultural value to that. And it's sort of, there's just so much that just sort of imagery and feeling that comes from the culture of New Orleans. But is that really what will connect with that younger drinker? Is that the part of popular culture or of mainstream culture that was the right way to make the connection to them. It might be a true expression of the brand. And for me, it was like, oh, that's really interesting. But for that younger drinker who's got Starbucks and you're trying to get yourself into their morning routine or their points of entry, is that the best way to connect with them culturally? Is Taylor Swift or somebody from some other genre of music more popular, more well known, might it have been a better way in, or might that have felt that it was a little too sort of opportunistic?
Yeah, I feel like being authentic to the city, to the brand, really digging into those roots was important. I think the second that we would have tried to tap, you know, a larger known recording artist, it would have been the bullshit that we know that millennials can sniff out.
I'd love to get your perspective on this, because I faced this myself with a client in the automotive category, a Mazda, here in the U.S. Now, I worked on Mazda for a number of years, and it was very clear that everybody on the client side and the research groups, everybody thought that Zoom, Zoom was a wonderful tagline, a significant brand asset, and it should always be there. And the challenge was that it actually got in the way of, in my opinion, of what the brand needed to do. But it took years, and it kept getting in the way because the research said, people recognize Zoom, Zoom. It's a distinctive brand asset. We can't abandon it. All of us from the strategy side were saying it's actually going counteractive to what we're trying to put forward as a message now with the evolution of the brand and the expansion of the brand portfolio. The reason I bring that up is you guys are still using the best part of waking up, either as a soundtrack or as a tag, or you're still using it, I suppose, is my bottom line. Is that not reinforcing the old image of the brand that maybe you're trying to escape, or are you finding that doesn't matter? You want it there in order to remind people of what it used to feel, what it represents for them. Or are you feeling that you through data are being signaled that it should stay?
I don't know that we are using the best part of waking up. I think it shows up sometimes in caption copy, but it's not in any of the spots.
But isn't the sound, isn't the beginning. The music is there.
Oh yeah, that's a nod. I think definitely making sure, because again, we're changing perceptions of the brand without changing anything about the brand. So having that that nod to the heritage, that iconic jingle as a way to kick it off felt like a creative choice versus a strategic one.
As the results have come in from the campaign, are you tracking it in terms of the use occasions? I'm super curious about this. Are you finding that these younger audiences are drinking at times where the more traditional user has been? In other words, are you moving away from the morning coffee occasion?
We haven't been tracking so much that at that level, but what we are doing a lot of research on is how younger folks are consuming coffee. And what's really interesting, this is something that you mentioned earlier, you know, why don't we have coffee shops? Well, actually what we're seeing is that it's swinging back around among Gen Z because of, you know, TikTok and the pandemic. So many Gen Zers are making coffee at home and trying really interesting recipes themselves rather than going out to coffee shops to hang out. So it's actually been a really huge learning to see how people are, especially younger people, are shifting that consumption. And of course, to cold and ready to drink.
Yeah. And I think even though I know it's early in the campaign, I wanted to just sort of drop in a couple of the success metrics that you guys have been tracking. You gave me some data from Qualtrics, their brand equity tracking study from October 2022, and you're showing brand awareness up 5 points from 79% to 84%, familiarity up 6 points from 76% to 82%, and consideration up 4 points from 57% to 61%. Now, these percentages may not seem major to a lot of marketers, but when you're in a massive category and you're such a dominant player already in that category, each of these percentage points can have a significant impact on the growth of your business. And I think what's important about these percentages is to realize that this is in the critical younger cohort of that target. So although it's early days, there is definitely some incremental value that's happening there that can be converted, hopefully, for you guys into increased sales. I know you can't give us the sales numbers right now, but maybe we'll get that when we check back in with you guys later. It is Ali O'Shea, VP Strategy Director at BBH in New York. BBH is now, I think you, so you were just telling me earlier, your crew has moved over from Publicis in New York to BBH. You guys are sort of in the BBH family now. And it is Alana Watson, Creative Director, BBH New York. Thank you both for coming on the show. And I really have an interest in the campaign and watching it as it evolves over time. I really do like some of the work. And so I'm really thank you for taking the time to come and speak with us all.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
And we will see everybody on the next episode.